Here from Mr. Beard.
May it please the court and counsel. This sentencing case focuses the court's attention on how the sentencing guidelines treat probation modifications as opposed to revocations for purposes of tallying criminal history category calculations, attributing points, if you will. When I wrote on the issue, I wrote and characterized the question as having a narrow component and a broader component. Narrowly speaking, we don't think that a probation modification accrues criminal history points, certainly not here. And then the broader issue, I think, is that, excuse me, we believe that there's a need to read all of the provisions in 4A1.2, A, B, and K in pari materia, in tandem with each other, so as to give full effect to the Sentencing Commission scheme. Now, the issue comes to the court fully litigated below. In fact, the district judge said that she felt sure that she would be receiving an answer 100% certain as to what the proper way to go is. Of course, she went against Mr. Mendez below. Judge Higginbotham, I had thought to mention or to bring up a question that you've asked in previous arguments. What is a district court supposed to do in cases like this? And I want to tell you very forthrightly what we think the law requires a district court to do in a case where there's been a modification of probation at the state level is to look and see whether or not there was actually a revocation or something akin to a revocation. The reason I say akin is this. In the federal scheme, we're certainly aware of what a revocation is. The rule sets that out. And so under provision 4A1.2K, if there was, in fact, a revocation of supervised release, it would be very...
It's pretty clear this was a modification. You agree with that, I think?
Yes, absolutely.
Had it been a... for a moment, let's talk about revocation versus modification. why, if anything, that's meaningful. With revocation... It's described for me the procedural processes that would be triggered as distinguished from modification.
Well, certainly if we were looking through a federal lens as to what revocation is, and typically that's the approach that we take in the federal-state scheme of things, sir, you would be looking at the possibility of a liberty interest deprivation. That's probably, I think, the central tenet, the idea that you can go and serve more time. You would have counsel with you, and then you would have a sentence being reimposed. And I think that's a good jumping off point to talk about the notion of reading these in pari materia, because of course 4A1.2A and 4A1.2B, they speak in terms of the imposition of sentences. And you look at what the sentence was at the adjudication of guilt. That's the plain text of those provisions. So you're looking at what that sentence was. If you had a revocation, to loop back to your question, you would have another sentence imposed. Federal judges do this in supervised release.
Well, you'd have to have a hearing.
I'm sorry?
You'd have to have a hearing.
You would, and the attendant protections. And Rule 32 basically...
My only suggestion is that it strikes me as being highly relevant that it's whether we're talking about a modification or a revocation, and you cannot collapse those two and treat them for the same under 4A1.2K, whatever.
Exactly, and I certainly would agree, and I think that this is why I said in response to the question that I rhetorically posed, what is a district court supposed to do? You look to see what creature you're dealing with. If you're dealing with the revocation, then you can go forward, and you'll go forward. Look to 4A1.2 A and B provisions, and you'll determine whether or not the resulting action from the revocation qualifies as a sentence. Some cases it might, some cases it might not. If you don't have a revocation, you never get that far. And that is the thrust of our case. We didn't have a revocation here. We had someone that was assigned to...
Why not just aggregate the total time he served?
Because the commission, for whatever reasons it's chosen, has distinguished between revocation and other procedures. It doesn't have this in place for modification, this notion of conflation. Now, I'm sure the United States would be happy to pick up on that point.
What was the basis for used by the district court to aggregate?
The district court here?
Yeah.
The What the district court did was to look and see that initially the individual, Mr. Mendez, had received 180 days, and then relying on an unpublished opinion in Chavez, after much discussion, the district court decided that the additional 365 days that had been served in a substance abuse facility would be added to the 180.
I understand what she did, but what's the rationale for that?
Well, the rationale that she, that the court employed was that set out in the unpublished Chavez opinion, which focused on what a term of imprisonment is or is not in the context of whether Texas community different sentences in the Texas statutory scheme would qualify as a term of imprisonment. But what Chavez did not do at all is to consider the fact that we didn't have the what I'll call the triggering revocation in the first place. There is no discussion of 4A1.2K. In contrast, here the district court was presented with that very argument by trial counsel below, and the parties, as I said, mentioned earlier, they fully litigated that issue. Ultimately, the district court went with Chavez, which doesn't speak to 4A1.2K. Presumably, that's why we're here today.
Well, the 11th Circuit would support what she did, would it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Could I ask you to repeat that?
The 11th Circuit would support what Judge Boyle did.
Perhaps, and the 9th Circuit would not. And this, I'd like to bring this up right now. It seems to me that what the government is implicitly urging you to do is to create a circuit split, because we know that at least one circuit.
Well, there's already a circuit split.
Perhaps to have this court join into a circuit split.
It's a question of which side of the split do we join?
I think that's fair, but I think
matters internally as to what we do with it.
Absolutely. I think that the better approach, the better question is to say, look at all of the Sentencing Commission's provisions. That there is a circuit split, or that it might become a deeper split, that's certainly true. But I think you can avoid choosing the wrong side, if you will, by giving effect to all three provisions. If you conflate the two, then basically you write 4A1.2K out of the sentencing scheme. It has to have some significance. And in fact, I think it's a critical significance, because 4A1.2K recognizes that revocations trigger much higher degree of protections than a modification. And that's very, very significant for reasons exactly like we're here. It's leading now to a relatively longer federal sentence. And I suppose I did misspeak in the sense that there was already the circuit split, but I don't see any reason for the court to not give effect to 4A1.2K. And while I can respect the scholarship in the Chavez unpublished per curiam opinion, it simply does not give that. It was a modification case as well, but for reasons that aren't evident to me, the significance of 4A1.2K seemed to have been lost upon the parties. It was not lost below, and it's not lost here. I also think that the rule that we're urging the court to take, to recognize and to take, not only does it read the provisions in 4A1.2 in pari materia, but they also then are consistent with Rule 32, with the other federal provisions. The rule that we're articulating basically harmonizes all aspects of the law. If the particular district judge looks and finds revocation, then that's easy. We go forward, much as, say, in Chavez and other cases. If the court does not, that closes the matter. Whatever happens in the modification is mux nix. It doesn't matter. That would be consistent with Rule 32, because 4A1.2K also talks about supervised release revocation, so it's going to be consistent with what's required to take place there, as well as internally with what the Sentencing Commission has done. I'd said in the briefs that I think that the case begins within a plain text reading of the guidelines, and I think it ends there as well, but I do think ours is the better rule. If you don't have any more questions, or Judge Jolly, if you didn't hear anything that has any questions at your end, I'm going to surrender my time, and then I'll speak to you here shortly.
Thank you. Counsel, let's go right to the heart of this modification versus revocation. The judge can go on to judge here went to modification, essentially, I guess. The choice between modification and revocation is a choice between the procedural protections the defendant gets and doesn't get, right?
In part. On that issue, I would say, if we're going to go to revocation and say that...
My question, though, is that one path, you cannot revoke the probation without giving the man a hearing and the procedural protections that are involved in that. Modification is a different, it's a shortcut, but all you're doing is you're modifying an existing sentence. Those are choices that one can make. Put aside the legality. The judge here did not revoke. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that, that the judge did not revoke under Texas law.
Right. And by not revoking, that was not the procedural protections that would have been triggered were denied this defendant, right or wrong. I mean, that's what happened.
I would disagree. Those protections were available to the defendant, but unlike he could have gone to a hearing, had the state of Texas prove up his violations, and he would have had those protections, and the judge then could have revoked his probation.
Well, my point, though, is that in order to aggregate, the simple answer to this is that if you're going to aggregate, that is, if you're going to take action that's detrimental to the defendant, that you choose the path of revocation, which gives him guarantees procedural protection as a matter of principle. How do you aggregate this without some justification? Some legal judges don't get to make up what you do with it.
If I may, I want to step back and point out that the issue of aggregation, adding the 6 months that Mr. Mendez initially served with the year that he served in safety, right, to me that is a separate issue of whether or not in the first instance we're even counting the safety time. It's the latter that I understand Mr. Mendez to be arguing here, that regardless of whether he had a completely suspended sentence, a partially suspended sentence, or even a deferred adjudication, as I understand his argument, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that it was placed on his probation by an amendment and not part of the sentence as it was originally articulated that matters here.
Matters. It certainly matters to him.
It matters to him, but I understand his argument to be...
It matters how much time he serves. I think that's pretty important.
Right, and I understand his argument to be that the safety time doesn't count because it was added through a modification, regardless of whether the initial 6 months is there or not. Mr. Mendez is essentially arguing that the year he was locked up in safety...
Well, what role does 4A12K play in this?
Well, by its explicit terms, it says, in the case of a revocation. And I don't believe the district court here treated his prior...
You read that to mean that the judge would just decide, well, I'm not going to revoke. I'll have to have a hearing do all that. I'm just going to modify the sentence and add these things up and so forth.
Because in this instance, the violations were plea bargained just as an initial case would be. There was a motion to revoke that was filed. And rather than go into a hearing and proving up the violation, the defendant and the state of Texas agreed that a modification would be the proper resolution of those violations. They withdrew the motion to revoke and by agreement, submitted to the court a modification that he would serve up to a year in safety. And that is precisely, I think, what was done.
You think this sentence was a product of a plea bargain?
Yes, it's very common in
a that this aggregation was a result of an agreement?
The safety time. The aggregation, to me, the aggregation issue, adding the safety time and the initial sentence is a separate issue.
Well, we know what I mean by aggregation, I think. You know what means by aggregation. It, by the literal terms here, the judge, as I read it, the judge could not do what they did. Now, if you're telling me that this was a product of a plea bargain, I don't understand that. I think what you're saying that there was a plea bargain, but I don't understand that the details of the plea bargain encompassed what had actually happened here.
I'm sorry, and I just don't understand. As I think,
let me make sure.
I'm sure you don't.
Let me see. When you talk about plea bargain, aren't you talking about what happened in state court and to add the time and substance abuse was part of a bargain?
Yes, it's very common.
But you're not talking about the guideline sentence that we're dealing with here on appeal was part of a bargain.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And if we're looking at the issue of whether that time in a safe P counts, because it wasn't a modification of the probation, it was not part of the sentence from the outset. Nothing in the guidelines, and again, I point to this court's decision in Chavez, nothing in the guidelines say that the district court, in assessing a prior sentence, is restricted to looking at the prior sentence as it was initially pronounced. But I would submit to you that, let's suppose for a second that Mr. Beard is correct, and any modifications of a sentence don't count, that it's the initial sentence that we look at. Even if that's a correct application of the guidelines, affirmance is appropriate here because the documents attached to the PSR reveal that when the Texas court first sentenced Mr. Mendez, it sentenced him to 10 years in prison. It wasn't until 6 months after he started that term that the Texas court granted his motion to modify and suspended the remaining balance of his time in prison and placed him on probation. If a new sentencing hearing, a new judgment, if those are the hallmarks of another sentence, and I would submit to you that Mr. Mendez readily accepts that he was sentenced, in his view, sentenced only once, that sentence was 10 years in prison. We don't even reach the probation and the modification. But I submit that isn't a correct application of the guidelines. And the court had said so in Chavez in a case that had very similar facts. Like Mr. Mendez does here, Mr. Chavez argued that his time added to his probation to serve a year in safe P was irrelevant because it was added by modification, was not part of his initial sentence. But this court said it took that issue on head on, and it rejected that argument, saying that there's nothing in the applicable guidelines or accompanying commentary that indicates that the sentence can only be the one that was initially pronounced without inclusion of any later modifications. Mr. Mendez is arguing entirely contrary to that holding, that there is actually something in the guidelines that imposes a temporal limitation on the term sentence of imprisonment, such that a district court is restricted, when it looks at a prior sentence, it's restricted to looking at only that prior sentence as it was first articulated. And as I understand that argument, sort of the in pari materia argument is that because there is a revocation guideline that says we include that time, and in his view, there isn't.
What is the relevant sentencing guideline, federal sentencing guideline here?
I think the most relevant guidance is comment note number 2 to section 4A1.2, where it says.
And what does it say?
It says explicitly that a sentence of probation is treated as a sentence under 4A1.1C, which at one point, unless a condition of probation requiring imprisonment of at least 60 days was imposed.
Unless a condition of probation.
Then. Yes.
Yeah. And that's what we had here, wasn't it?
It is. What the court, what this court held in Valdez, and of course the obvious implication of that is that time imposed as a condition of probation is included in a sentence of imprisonment. And I'd point out that there's no temporal limitation in that language. It doesn't say a sentence of probation is treated as is given 1 point unless a condition of at least 60 days was imposed at the time of the original sentence. Despite Mr. Mendez's request that this court add that language in effect to that guidance. I'd also point out that Section 4A1.2A1 is corroborative that there isn't.
Do you maintain that what happened here was in compliance with that guideline?
Yes. Yes.
How so?
The commentary
the literal asks, language, the literal language of it, it seems to me, is directed in the teeth of it.
The comment asks would pose the question: was a condition of probation requiring at least 60 days imposed? And the answer is yes. It was a modification, but it was a condition of probation imposing up to a year in safe P, nonetheless. I think corroborative is the fact that 4A1.2A1 doesn't impose a temporal limitation to the term prior sentence. In fact, it says prior sentence means any sentence previously imposed. And of course, the term any begs of a broad interpretation, it would be inconsistent with that broad interpretation to then say, no, prior sentence means only that sentence as it was initially articulated.
Really, the language does say prior sentence means any sentence previously imposed upon adjudication of guilt, guilty plea, trial, etc. There's at least a suggestion that it's the original sentence, but you don't see that, apparently.
No, I don't. I think it's and the court in Chavez, this court certainly didn't see it that way either. But
Chavez mentions, I won't get my numbers wrong, 2A, 2K as well. Do you consider Chavez a one that applied the revocation language?
No, I don't believe the court.
It doesn't discuss it. Did it? I mean, it doesn't analyze it that way. You do not think it applied the revocation?
I don't believe the court did, and I don't think the district court treated it as a revocation either. I think what the Chavez court, what the court decided in Chavez, was that irrespective of, it's implicit and is irrespective of K, the time added to the probation as a safe P counts. Just as it
counts as a prior sentence.
I'm sorry?
Just counts as a prior sentence.
Yes. Now, technically there it was going under 2L1.2, the term sentence imposed, but the court explicitly, you know, recognized that sentence imposed under 2L1.2 has the very same meaning as sentence of imprisonment.
Well, I thought 4A1.2, the requirement that probation, quote, be revoked before terms of imprisonment can be aggregated and need not be strictly construed and can encompass the whatever the words go on to say, cannot be revoked before terms of imprisonment can be aggregated.
I think that the view that 4A1.2...
I'm talking about the view. I'm talking about what the rule says.
I understand. And I think that once we acknowledge what the revocation provision, the function of it, I think it undercuts
I'm trying to focus on what the rules are, not some holistic examination. When people start talking about the views and these larger meanings, it suggests strongly to me they're running away from the language of the rule. And last time I looked, we followed the rule. So deal with the language of the rule. How do you escape that?
It says, when there is a revocation sentence, a new separate sentence, it explains that we don't treat that as a separate sentence for purposes of having its own 1 to 3 points and the original sentence as 1 to 3 points. And I think that's best explained in United States versus Reed, the Seventh Circuit case cited in my 28J letter, that...
Well, there wasn't a revocation here, was there?
Correct.
It was a modification.
It was a modification.
Okay.
And it became part of his sentence.
So the condition of the language never occurred.
Correct.
How does that support you?
It supports me that, first of all, the time in a safe P counts. Had there never been the prior 6 months, had there, just as in Chavez, if we're only talking about a straight probation and time is added, and under Chavez, it counts. If we're talking about adding it either to zero, I guess, to the 6 months, when the guidelines say we count the 6 months, and I think that's undisputed, and the guidelines provide that we count the time imposed as a condition of probation, the necessary implication, if I'm told add this and add that, the only way I can do that is to add them together. I think that I don't believe that the drafters of the guidelines intended for revocation, saying that we add time on revocation, to necessarily imply that we don't add time on the original sentence.
Did you argue this to the district court?
No, because the issue of aggregation never came up. The 6 months was undisputed. The whole, and I understand this actually to be Mr. Mendez's argument, the whole argument is whether the safe P time counts or not, because it was a modification, was not an original condition, and was not added, I'm sorry, was not imposed as part of a revocation.
We've created an enormously complex sentencing system. for good or for ill. And if we don't adhere clearly to the literal language of the language and not try to spin this in even more complicated, we have circuit divisions over this very fine point. We've really taken sentencing into a maze, long departed from the sense of fairness.
I understand.
What really happens here is that you defy the language of the language of the what the rules of the guidelines say. It seems to me.
If I might return to Judge Southwick's point about
You have one circuit that's with you.
I'm sorry.
I said the 11th Circuit seems to agree with that. But.
I believe so. And if I may return
They explicitly address the modification versus revocation distinction in the Glover decision.
And as I understand it, I think the 11th Circuit is in, along with the 6th, 7th, and I believe 8th Circuits have treated these as, in effect, these modifications in response to a violation, that is, as it was here, as in effect a partial revocation. Now, I've not, of course, put the weight of my argument there. I wanted the court to understand that that's a viable argument in at least 4 circuits. But because the district court never treated this as a revocation and instead followed this court's guidance in Chavez, I think that's the most direct path to affirmance in this case. And if I may return to the point about 4A1.2A1,
There are some constitutional requirements that are triggered on revocation. You have to have a formal finding that the probationer has committed a violation, and you have to have a determination the violation was serious enough to warrant reimposing the probationer's original sentence.
Your Honor.
There are significant differences. These words aren't interchangeable, revocation, modification.
That may be, and I would just return
to maybe. That's the basic, unless you disagree with the law, it's not maybe, it is.
Well, and that process was available to Mr. Mendez in the state court.
I'm sorry?
That process was available to Mr. Mendez in the state court. If he wanted to deny those violations, he certainly had every right to a hearing to require the state of Texas to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the violations occurred, and then the district court could have revoked that probation and reimposed the 9.5 years that it had suspended. But he chose not to, and instead to agree with the state that the proper resolution of those violations was instead to go to be sentenced to safe P for up to a year. Now, if 4A1.2A1 means that a prior sentence is a sentence imposed only at the adjudication of guilt, then I would return to the facts of this case, that if we are looking only at a static sentence as it was initially imposed here, that is 10 years, that when the court later modified it, it didn't modify it upon the adjudication of guilt, if that's how we're restricting that term. And there was no.
Well, the man is tried and convicted, and he gets a sentence in the state court. Now, the question of what do we do with that for federal sentencing purposes is controlled by federal guidelines. And we have explicit language in here that say this. And you say, well, it could have been a revocation, but it wasn't. It was a modification. And so the trouble I'm having with you, and I'm not fussing with you, I understand your argument, but that I'm having difficulty with this jump we make to say it, when the federal guidelines, which direct and guide the United States District Court judge, as to how he is to treat this, the established fact of what happened, it says it, and then we say, well, yeah, that doesn't matter. It could have been of that, so therefore we're going to add these things. And that has large consequences.
Well, it could, if we are going to apply 4A1.2K, that there would have to
but
be that revocation.
If you don't apply that, then what do you apply?
You look at the prior sentence, and I would submit as recognized.
Look at what? What law do you look to?
I'm looking to the guidelines, and specifically comment note number 2, that you include the probation time. That if we're looking at that prior sentence, and it is recognized by Chavez, the district court isn't limited. I'm sorry, I'm out of time, if I may.
Please finish your response to Judge Higginbotham.
Thank you. That, as recognized by this court in Chavez, the district court isn't limited to looking at that prior sentence only as it existed at the time it was initially imposed without regard for any later modifications.
All right, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
A broad comment and then some specific replies or responses. Over the years, we've learned our federal district courts are to avoid many trials at federal sentencing, to avoid many trial at federal sentencings, and to try to avoid having to get into what happened in state court proceedings. Sometimes proceedings will be years before. I'm not prepared to concede what Mr. Mendez did or did not have available to him by in front of a state judge, with state attorneys and state prosecutors. Nor do I do we advocate a rule that says that district judges, federal district judges, should be going back and making those determinations. I understand. I don't understand the government actually to be advocating a rule here, other than an affirmance. But to the extent that they have advocated a rule, it would seem to be that the federal judge needs to go delving into this particular. Matters that took place below.
Counsel, I think what the rule is that they're proposing is they wouldn't mind if we followed the four circuits or however many it is that treats a revocation, modification the same as a revocation. I think he senses that maybe at least one member of the court, he's not enthusiastic about that, maybe more. But he's also arguing in the alternative, which is just 4A1.2 prior sentence, subpart A, prior sentence, that the initial prior sentence was 10 years. And then after 6 months, the sentence was modified, and the prior sentence as of that time is the one that we're looking at. So that was the modification, but the modification became the prior sentence relevant for 4A1.2A. So what about that?
I think that in response, first of all, as a matter, again, of plain text, we are looking at the sentence that was imposed upon the adjudication of guilt. This was a shock probation. Nowhere below did this argument come forward. In fact, the government below said, well, no, if you're in prison, that sentence. So they were looking at SAFE-P as a sentence. But the reason that I'm reluctant to try to walk down that path is not because I perceive it to be at my peril or my position's peril, but because what you're immediately going to run into is, was this a sentence that was suspended? Was it a sentence of probation that was imposed initially? And these are all wonderful distinctions, certainly so at the state court level. But for purposes of federal sentencing, we look to having the federal judge, the district court, look at the guidelines, give effect to all three provisions. And yes, a revocation is different than a modification. It is not because the Sentencing Commission says that it is, although I think implicitly they've said that it is, but because there are different constitutional protections that apply in a revocation. That's not defense PAP. That's the federal rule. That's federal law, and we're looking through a federal lens. It was refreshing in an ironic way to listen to my adversary talk about some of the intricacies of state law. I'm trying to propose a rule that is based in federal law. Look to see if there is a revocation or something that would be analogous to a revocation, and there's not on this record, and then go forward to determine whether or not there are sentences that accrue points. Chavez did not undertake this analysis, and I'm certainly loath to cast aspersions, but the reality is it did not mention 4A1.2K. If it had, I'm confident that we would not be here today, and I would be enjoying the warmer weather in Dallas probably right now. It's the government's asking you to fly into the weeds, if you will, and I'm asking the court to take the macro view, the God's eye view, and to look down and say, was there a revocation? If there was, continue and assess points as necessary. Although you would still have plain language requirements in some case, it has to be at the adjudication of guilt. That's when we look to whether or not, under the plain text of 4A1.2A, that's where we look at what the sentence is. But there is no revocation here. And I think it's pretty much that simple. Our rule does no violence to Federal Rule 32, does no violence to 3553A, does no violence.
Well, let me ask you about this. You want to put this into K. And there is certainly authority and briefing to support that. But that is a situation generally where somebody perhaps has served a period, is now out on probation, has the probation revoked, he has the protections procedurally that we're talking about. My understanding of this defendant, this inmate, is that he was in prison for 10-year sentence, and after 180 days, which may have been the plan all along, you had this modification. So you're really not looking at a revocation of probation. You're looking at an alteration of a 10-year sentence, are you not?
Well, you're looking at, in any event, you're looking at a modification.
I wasn't trying to alter, change the word, but a modification of a 10-year sentence of imprisonment.
Well, he received the shock, and probation sentence. And then what we do know on this record is that there was a modification, not a revocation. And we also know, by the way, just to clear this up, there was an aggregation. If you look at what the probation officer did, the probation officer added 365 days. I'm referring now from memory to the first and second PSR addenda. So there was, in fact, an aggregation. I realize our time is complete. I appreciate the court's attention, Judge Jolly. And we ask that the sentence be remanded for resentence. Excuse me, that the case be vacated and the sentence remanded.
Let me say this to all counsel who have appeared in this case today. I believe this is the one that was originally scheduled for tomorrow, and you were contacted. I appreciate your willingness to work with that, and I hope your schedules were not too greatly.
Worked out well. Thank you very much.